one book for this morning. I have an extra one here. If you want to hold up your hand, I'll get it to you here. Okay. We are in lesson number 10, I believe it is. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. We didn't finish that last week. But if you have a chance to look at it, I'm going to go back in here and go over a couple of things. Then we'll try to finish this lesson today and move on to the next one. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. And the verse also goes on to follow, saying, you know, that there's even more to it than there. There's loving favor that we can look at as well. But anyway, good to see everyone out this morning. I was talking to Chris just a minute ago about trains. You know, last week we've had a lot of us have been caught by trains lately being blocked. So I was asking Chris what they were doing. He said they're doubling the size of a lot of trains. That's what's happening to us. They're doing more with less. So they've got less people. They're running fewer trains, but they're longer. That's more economical maybe to some of the corporate people. But now, if you get a train, Chris knows exactly how the footage between Harrison Lane and Thrasher Pike. He told me it's, I don't know how many thousand feet, but a train that's got 80 cars on it can stop between those two spots. But you double the cars, and I've counted some of these trains that come by here lately. There have been 150 cars on them, stuff like that. 150 cars stopped on that double track somewhere to let another train pass. It'll block Harrison Lane and Thrasher Pike. So I remember here one Wednesday night, we had several people who were 10 minutes late because they were blocked here on Thrasher Pike. Chris says that's what's going on, and I know Sunday, Scott and Angie were about 10 minutes late getting here, and they said the train had blocked them at Harrison Lane. And finally, Scott drove around. The same train was still there when services were over, and we went home. Had one car blocking Harrison Lane, just one car having the lane blocked. But that's what's happening to us, those of us who are crossing railroad tracks coming here. And I appreciate that information from Chris. Of course, a lot of mornings when he's not here, he's riding the rails somewhere, taking a train up to Kentucky or something. But that's just part of what's going on right now. Okay, we're doing more with less. Trying to. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. And we looked at people like Abraham. Abraham had a good name. Abraham had done some things that were right in God's sight. He carried that good name with him. And even today in the Middle East, there are a lot of people who show allegiance to Abraham as their father, that type of thing. And we see that even in the New Testament, a lot of people who gave Abraham that allegiance as their father. Job was another man he talked about, and we've known about Job and how Job remained faithful to God, even in the face of all the adversity that was there. Job was very faithful and also had a great name among people around him. Even though people turned against him at some points, Job stayed safe in the area that he knew where God was taking care of him, and Job did not move. Joseph, another one. We can look at Joseph. Joseph is one of my personal heroes in the Bible. All the things that happened to him, and yet Joseph never strayed that we know of in any way. I'm sure there were things he did that were not perfect in his life, but we're not told about them. But Joseph stood steady all the way, and as I think I mentioned last week, he told the folks, hey, he knew what was going to happen. God had made a promise of the promised land. He knew they'd be going out of Egypt at some point, and he gave instructions to take his bones with him so that they could bury his bones in the land of promise. So he knew that about Abraham's, the promise God made to Abraham. He knew God was going to keep his promise, just like God's going to keep his promise to us today. Barnabas was one. We didn't get too much to talk. We didn't talk about too much last week, but Barnabas, faithful to the God, faithful to the apostles, a big help to Apostle Paul, a big help to the Christians in the early church. He was one of these men who risked his life in a lot of the things that he did and the support that he gave to other people. He was that committed to what he had been taught and what he knew to be the truth. He was so committed that he would be willing to go on mission trips at great distance from home at the risk of life and so forth in order that other people could be saved. So we look at some of these names that were very good names. I think I brought out the fact that I had looked up the 100 most popular names for boys in 2017, I think it was. And a lot of those names are names that we read of in the Bible. A lot of them show up in the Bible for a good reason. People look at that and they say, well, that we would like for our son or even our daughter to be like that person. And a lot of times we give allegiance to family members that we have thought so much of as far as we are named after them. And we pass that name on to carry that legacy with them, hoping that legacy would be part of their life as well. But let's look at some of the other names that came up that we don't hear very much of anymore. On the other side of that coin, some people who had marred their names forever. Look at Ahab. Ahab is one of those people who had marred his name forever. And we were talking about the fact that Jezebel stirred him up. Even though he was king, she kind of ruled the roost there. And she stirred him up and caused him to do various things. And to the point that when he was overthrown, they even threw Jezebel's body out on the street and they trampled her under the horse. And we talked about the fact that they buried just her skull, her feet, and the palms of her hand, but the rest of her body they just ground up in the dirt. They trod over her. Rehoboam is another one. Jeroboam is another one. Jeroboam was there, was one of, he's fled to Egypt during Solomon's reign because Solomon sought to kill him at one point in time. He had been a servant to Solomon in verse 28 of 1 Kings 12 chapter, but something went wrong there. He was not doing the things that he should have been doing, and Solomon recognized that. Solomon sought to kill him. He fled to Egypt, but later on, the children of Israel, after Solomon died, brought him back. And he talked about the fact that he caused Israel to sin. And I think we made mention on this a little bit last week, but do you remember the four things that he did that changed worship? What were those four things? Anybody? Pardon? Okay, he built idols, that's one. He changed the place of worship. He built idols. And there were two others. Do you remember what they were? Let me go back to one other thing, though, about that. Two idols. What did we talk about last week was, what's the first commandment that God had given them in the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And he went further. What else did he say? Thou shalt have no graven images. You know, and here they had made graven images. Now I'm thinking to myself, what is it about this mass of people? Surely somebody in that group said, wait a minute, this isn't right. Wait a minute, that we're not following God's law. We have no record of anybody speaking up, but didn't somebody see that? And the thousands of people that were there, I know that, but maybe they were not members of the tribe of Levi, who were expected to know the law, who were expected to handle the sacrifices and all those things. But still, Didn't somebody else know that? And how does that relate to us today? Any lesson there for us to learn? I think the lesson there is if we see things wrong in a congregation, we need to speak up. We need to say something about it. We need to try to help other people understand the truth so that we're not taken off into some direction that we don't need to be going in. It's an easy thing to happen. I think we've probably all seen it in our life. I think we also mentioned the fact that Jeroboam and Rehoboam took Israel off into other areas. Jeroboam was head over the northern kingdom, and the northern kingdom was taken off into captivity. How long between Solomon's reign and that captivity? Anybody remember how many years we've talked about? It's like 400 years. 400 years, God sent them prophets and folks to say, hey, this is not right. Folks to try to steer them in another direction, and they refused to go. They got set in that habit, and they forgot about what God had told them. And as they were carried off into captivity, none of those those 10 tribes that were involved there, none of them lived to come back. The only ones who lived to come back, and the other two tribes, Benjamin and Judah, also went off into captivity. But some of those people survived, such as Daniel and others. They survived and they came back. But they were the remnant that came back. But the others were destroyed forever. God said he would do that. And all it changes, four things in their worship. So it's something for us to pay attention to. Now remember also the fact we were looking at, here's Solomon who reigned how many years? Anybody know? Anybody remember? 40 years he reigned. But between David and Solomon, look at all the wealth that they collected, all the wealth that poured into the country, largely because of Solomon's wisdom and things. But all the gold and the silver, all of the other things that they had that came in, here's Jeroboam and Rehoboam, they take all of this and they waste it. They lose it. They squandered it, much like the story of the prodigal son. It took his wealth and took off. And here was Solomon, who was making that comment, you know, about vanity. All is vain, all these things he worked for in his life, and they hated his life from the standpoint that he's built up all these things, and he's going to turn it all over to somebody else. And he asked that question, I wonder if that person I turn it over to is going to be wise or going to be a foolish man. Turned out he let his own son was foolish with it, what he did. All this is squandered, and just in the next few years, all the things that David had built and Solomon built together, it's all gone and taken away. Any comments from anybody on some of that? A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. Got into a couple other things here that I think I mentioned at the end. And, well, let me mention, go back to the lesson here on page 66. The Civil War came and talked about there with Robert E. Lee. They asked him if he might use his name to advertise a new brand of liquor. And Robert E. Lee said, you know, he didn't have much left after the war. The only thing he had was his good name. And he said he didn't want them to use his name for that. Harry had to stand up for his good name, even in the case of something like that where somebody would have given him money maybe. And I mentioned last week one item, I'll go back to that, but as far as closing. But I was talking with Kevin about the class and closing the class out with comments about a good name versus a bad name in life. And he was talked to me about the name of Dr. Mudd, who was the doctor who cared for Booth after Booth had shot Lincoln. And the fact a lot of people say, well, when your name is Mudd or my name is Mudd, they think it came from there. And a lot of people had always, and even Kevin believed that. And looked it up a little bit, checked on it. Apparently the phrase, your name is Mudd, occurred before Dr. Mudd treated Booth for his fractured leg. But it still sticks from the standpoint that even today, a lot of people give credit to that. Your name is Mudd, coming from the fact that Dr. Mudd was then, they did not believe he was telling the truth when he said he treated this guy, comes in with a fractured leg. He did not know at the time that Booth had shot Lincoln. He did not know that Lincoln had died. Of course, it's not like the news today where if you can pull a car over somewhere and cop gets shot in the leg in Tupelo, Mississippi, and it's on national news the next day. It's not like that back then, obviously. He did not know. But they arrested him anyway, charged him with treason part of the conspiracy to kill Lincoln, put him in jail for over 3 years. Then I think it was Andrew Johnson as president pardoned him. Actually, the prison guard died. This is aside from our lesson. The prison doctor died, and Dr. Mudd took over the prison as far as treating the prisoners. And after 3 years or so, Andrew Johnson pardoned him. But that phrase, you know, my name is Mudd, a negative phrase toward people's name, came from somewhere back there before Dr. Mudd, but it stuck with him as well. And then I mentioned last week also that an Italian who had come to the United States by the name of Charles Ponzi started in 1920 with this investment scheme that he built up, and we've all heard of it and seen it even lives today. That he told people, invest your money with me, and in 45 days I'll make sure you return a return of 50% of it. In 90 days, I'll guarantee you a return of 100%. Sounds great, doesn't it? Sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? Well, he was tried and convicted of fraud and put in prison. In August of 1920, later he was deported back to Italy and died at the age of 66. He was penniless when he died. But the name of Charles Ponzi is still here today, is it not? Now let me ask you one other question about a name, and a name that's good. What about the good name of this congregation? Do you and I have a part of that? We certainly do, don't we? What will be this congregation's name in 5 or 10 or 20 years? Will we still have a good name? And what is my responsibility? What is your responsibility in that direction? It's one of those things we need to think about. So I just want to leave you with that and the thoughts of this lesson here. Those are some things that I'd like for us to think about as we go on down through our life here as part of this congregation. A good name is better to be chosen than great riches. A good name would be better as a congregation to be chosen than a large number of people, than a large facility, than a lot of things. A good name is worth a lot to us. Say it again. I'm just not hearing you.
Did you miss pages 62 and 63 of the book, or was I asleep?
Did I miss 62 and 63? No, I went over that for Job and Joseph, Abraham. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, we know those men had good names, and those men continued to have a good name throughout the Bible, and even today, A lot of people get the name of Joseph. A lot of people get the name of David. A lot of people want to name their sons after those names. So those are some things that we can look at for what is a good name and what does it mean to us. Okay, let's go into lesson 11 a little bit, if you don't mind, please. Lesson 11, Proverbs 14:12. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. He repeats that in chapter Proverbs 16, verse 25 also. Repeated to the point that, you know, just for that emphasis for us to realize that there is something, a way that seemeth right to us. Have you ever, and he starts out with the idea, and I think this maybe has happened to a lot of us, have you ever been driving down the road and missed a turn or thought you were going in the right direction, someplace you had gone back to, had not been there for 20, 30 years, and make a turn and get out in the country somewhere and say, well, this doesn't look right at all. Ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's happened to all of us a lot. And used to, when I was younger, if I ever went someplace I could remember and go and get back there, I remembered it pretty well, but it doesn't, that's not the way it is anymore, is it, Grady? No, we can't do that. We can't remember it that well anymore, can we? Took some parts off your lawnmower and then put it back together right away. Well, I got a suggestion for you. Before you take it apart the next time, take a picture of it with your phone. Oh, you take it to your grandson. Okay, all right. Well, I found that's helpful, though. I take a picture with my phone, and then I can at least go back and see how it used to be. I don't have a problem if I take something. Jack, do you have that problem? You take something apart, and if you don't get right back for 2 weeks, it's tough to put it back together? Go to the hardware store and find another part. Okay, that works. That's true for me as well. I can see, you know, it's if I put it back together within 2 days, I can remember where it goes and how the pieces fit together maybe. But after a couple of weeks, no, that's not necessarily true. But even there, haven't we all gone down some rabbit trail at some point in our life thinking, hey, I'm on the right track? I don't care. Something in business, something in our finances maybe. I don't care. There's just so many things like that that happen to us where we think we're going the right way and find out a little bit later. No, most of us are married, and we have a co-pilot that helps with that, right? No, you should have turned there. It would have been better if we go. I hear that occasionally. And fortunately, she's on her way to get Judy Lusk right now, so I can talk about her. And if she needs to hear what I said, I'll tell her myself. But it's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes we think we know the right way, but none of us are expert in everything, are we? And a lot of times, if we can get to the advice of some other people, and it's one of those things we've talked about in other previous lessons that Solomon has told us, get advice from wise people. It helps us to stay on the right course, does it not? Solomon makes this comment. He's talking about spiritual things, obviously, talking about the spiritual ways, being in death, being in the eternal separation from God. But at the same time, I think we can see how it applies in our life in other ways. Just because we have a belief in something, regardless of how sincere we are, just because we have an opinion, and our opinion is based on all this logic that we've got. You ever have, you know, I can remember in raising the boys when they did something that was really foolish. A lot of times you ask, well, why did you do that? And they had a list that must have been that long at least as to why it was okay for them to do that, right? In their opinion, in their their opinion and their logic, it was right. It was okay. Kids are like that sometimes, aren't they? Are adults ever like that? Sometimes we get the same, you know, I have a friend in South Carolina. We traveled together, we worked on motorhomes together and things like that through those years. Steve will not buy an Interstate battery ever anymore. He's just not going to buy an Interstate battery. He'll buy a Napa battery. Now, me personally, I've not had a problem with an Interstate battery. And I've had several of them. He had one battery one day that had trouble returning it, something, so he'll never use it again. That's his opinion. I don't know that that's a good opinion necessarily. Regardless of how well it's thought out, though, that's his opinion, and he's sticking with it. I'm not so sure that that's a way that seemeth right to him. I think he's spending more money in some places than he needs to. However, that's his opinion. How about a tradition? How about people who are stuck on certain traditions? No matter where it started or who started it, they're going to continue that tradition. We see that sometimes in religion, do we not? A lot of people that we know who are maybe friends or relatives are hung on some of those traditions that have been there. Now, do we do the same thing here? Are we stuck on traditions? I'll mention one thing. Where did you sit here last week? In the building? Did you sit right there last week? Yeah, Pat and Jack sat. Ella, did you sit right there last week? Now, Terry did not. Terry said to some of us. See, Terry doesn't follow a tradition necessarily. You sat the same place, didn't you? I know Tom and Cave got their cushions right back there, and they're there in South Carolina this weekend, but Edna, don't you look like I'm going to leave you out. Here you're right back there on the back row, back there right between Doris and Ruth Ann. I mean, that's a traditional place, isn't it? We get stuck on a lot of traditions, don't we? Anything wrong with that? No, not really. But just that we all have that tendency. How about people who are dedicated to a particular doctrine? Whether it's based on fact or Bible or not. I think I've told you before about our good friends in South Carolina, our neighbors right across the street. We didn't go anywhere that they didn't know where we were going. They didn't go anywhere we didn't know where. We knew what they were doing every day. We knew what their grandkids were doing. Just the closest of friends. If we stayed in South Carolina, I would have, except for the fact that Jimmy's a couple of years older than me, I would have probably made him executor of my will. We would walk the block in the mornings and talk and visit. We were very, very close friends. We're still close friends with them. But Kathy told me one day, I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm talking about religion. They were members of a predominant denomination there. I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm comfortable where I'm at. I'm going to stay right where I'm at. I don't care. Don't want to hear it anymore. We had to just cross that off. Religion is one of those things we just could not talk with them anymore. But they're wonderful people. I'd trust them with every penny I had. They're that kind of folks. They're zealous folks, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. They're very zealous. Some of these tragedies and natural disasters we have on the coast. Jimmy runs a washing machine trailer that their denomination put together. He will go down there and spend 2 weeks or a month sleeping in a tent, sleeping in a sleeping bag, and washing people's clothes. Now you gotta admire somebody to do that, right? He's putting his doctrine where his, putting his mouth and his money where that doctrine's at. Even though you start talking about the book of Acts, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about the conversion of six people who were baptized. I don't want to hear that. How do we? There's a way that seemeth right unto a man. It may be a belief, regardless of how sincere, or an opinion, regardless of how well thought of, a tradition, even a doctrine. And we run into it in our families. Every one of us probably do on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis. We have, and probably in your family, as well as other families, we've just gotten where we've learned just not do that anymore. I had an uncle in the Campbell family who had become a Jehovah's Witness. They lived in Rockford, Illinois. Come down for a family reunion, and it got to be just a big explosion over what we're going to talk about. And finally, my Uncle Flavel just didn't come anymore. He just stayed in Illinois, and he died there, having never come back down. And so I don't know, you know, hey, a lot of discussion over that type of thing in the family there, but it just got to the point that they couldn't talk about it civilly and in a civil manner, and they walked away. A big communication with people. We don't always listen to understand, do we? We oftentimes listen to reply. How many of you have talked to people before and in the conversation realized that they didn't hear everything that was said? I had two or three hands went up. What happens when that occurs? Why does that happen? And that happens with all of us, does it not? Gloria does that. Now, I've never been guilty of it, to understand, but Gloria has. What happens to us if you've got 5 points to make? What happens to someone who's listening to you? You all are awful quiet this morning. Margaret, how come you're so quiet this morning? Oh, yeah. What happens when you've, let's say you've got 5 points. Bob, what happens when you get 5 points you want to make and somebody's listening to you? What happens a lot of times? That's true. People like it that way. But you're right. You, Phil?
We were in Minnesota. We had a young man in the congregation there today, dominating preacher. He wanted to cut. And we went, we had, you know, studying why we don't have instrumental music. We went home that weekend, and he come back, and he said, my dad said, like 4 out of 5 are wrong, so I was in.
Huh. How about that? What I had thought of, and what's happened to me, I think like what Bob was talking about, there was a lot of people, again, we listen to respond, and we don't always listen to understand. And you've got 5 points. You've made the first one. Maybe you've made the second one, and next, that person that's listening, a lot of times latches on to something you said in that second one, and their mind goes off over here, and you've mentioned 3 and 4, they didn't catch 3 and 4. We all do that. It's a hard thing to sit and listen. What is a technique that we've learned sometime in management to get around that? How do we get around that? Anybody?
Stop.
Okay, we stop, but what else?
Well, just say, I don't believe you're listening to what I'm saying.
Okay.
Start over again. Typically,
we'll get rid of it. All right. Ken? Good. I like that one. That's one I like. Okay, now let's go back over. What did I say? 1, 2, 3. And ask that person to repeat back to, and then they'll miss out on that point they missed, and you can go back over it again. But I believe that's a technique that we have to learn a lot. It's human nature, is it not? We all do that. I know one of the things that as a problem that I've had a lot of times that somebody would come up and say, give me a suggestion, or would you help me with this? And sure, I'll be glad to help you with that. Maybe I missed the point there too. But also then I turn around and somebody else comes back to me and says, takes me in a different direction. I was a project manager. I lived with that all the time. I'm always being interrupted with stuff like that. And you've got to have a system for going back and putting that back together. Wait a minute. What did I promise Darlene Doak? She asked me to do something. Sometimes I'll go back home and I'll sit down. And what did Paulette ask me to do or check on? And if I don't go down and put on, I'm a list maker, but if I don't put that back on that list, then next thing, about a month later, Paulette will come up to me and say, did you ever check on that? Check on what? I'll forget it. But if I can put it down on a list, at least it's there. I may not get to it right away, but I'll have it. Maybe I won't. The problem is when you get five lists, which list do you follow? You know, that's a problem too. But that's one of those things we do. We stop people sometimes. Did you catch the other point I make over here? And sometimes during that conversation, you'll realize they didn't hear all of what you said. And then, like Ken was mentioning, we go back and ask them to repeat that back to us. Now, that's in the military, that's something that's done all the time, is it not? Those of you who've been in the military, that's something that's done all the time to make sure that that person understood what's being asked. Don't make me ask twice. Well, that encourages that other person to listen more carefully. That's true. And someone who's dependent on that job for their income, maybe that strikes a bell with them to listen, be more careful about that. Okay. There is a way that seemeth right to a man. Do we have these problems in religion as well? We certainly do, don't we? We certainly do. A lot of times, people do not always listen to everything that's said, even those of us maybe sometimes. And that's one of the things that I think David does a good job of trying to make sure that the lesson he produces is something we can take home with us, something that we can use in our life. And that's important to all of us, that we can hear what's being said, hear what's being taught. But then that's why we are always admonished to study, to work at it, to go back over it again, to read it again, to get a better understanding of it, so that we know that we're on the right track. Wouldn't you hate to be out in southern Texas somewhere following somebody's directions some night, and it's 11 o'clock at night, and you've been driving all day, and you're tired, and you're looking for that motel that you've already made a reservation at, and then you find out you're on the wrong road, that you're an hour away, because of a misturn, or because somebody gave you the wrong directions, or because you misunderstood the directions? Wouldn't you hate to be lying in your bed in a hospital knowing this may be your last week that you're alive and wonder if you were on the right road or not? I'd want to be absolutely sure that the way that seemeth right unto man was the way that's in accordance with God's word, wouldn't you? We need to study to show ourselves approved unto God. We need to study to make sure that what David is telling us, to make sure what an eldership is telling us, to make sure what a Sunday school teacher is telling us is the right thing. Because when we stand before God, it'll be this book and us. Thank you very much.